This is CliffCentral.com.
Yes. How lovely, Mavs. Your musical, what do we call them?
Capabilities?
No. It's more like she's doing. There's a word for someone who just does kind of their own riff on something.
Yes, please look this way because I'm just a musical genius, aren't I? Look this way for an answer. I don't know.
I'll remember
like
it just now.
A cover.
Sure, are we?
No,
are we,
it's not even.
Are we actually going to call it a riff? I mean, I thought I was just whistling.
No, you were doing a whole thing.
Oh, it's a talent.
You're an impresario. That's what you are.
Oh, impresario.
Oh, right. January the 16th, baby.
It's a hell of a way to start the year, Max. Impressing us with your musical talent.
You've become an impresario.
Wow. Good morning. It's Tuesday. And we've got plenty to get into today. We want to hear from you. We want to talk some nonsense, hopefully make you laugh, hopefully make you smile, hopefully make you think, all of that stuff. You know, that's the general goal for us in the morning. No Ben this morning. He's off today. He'll be back tomorrow along with Gord Laws. And it's going to be busy. I mean, we've got lots to do today. We've got, let me see here, we've got the... five things. We've got the that movie premiere, which I'll tell you about later on. Run is popping by with some cryptocurrency news, and we will play you an interview I did with a guy called Ray Wixell. What an interesting guy. He's basically an Olympic athlete, a former Olympic athlete. He ran Nike in South Africa when it first came back here after 1994. He's managed people like Caster Semenya. For a long time before, I think it was 7 years before he killed Riva, but he managed Oscar for a while too. He's really very well known in sports circles in South Africa, and somehow a lot of people don't know who he is outside of those circles. So we'll talk to him. Fascinating dude. And we've got some interesting things happening in the world of Said by Sia. We found some theme music, which we're going to try out today for the first time.
We're still on that journey.
Yeah, we have to. We gotta keep
you can't
up with
rush
that.
Perfection, Mabal.
Of course not.
Thanks.
So a lot of people are messaging in after yesterday's show. A lot of people obviously listen to the podcast, so they don't listen live, and then they want to tell us what they think. So, Gareth, going back to yesterday's conversation, says, someone tell Mabs last year I had my appendix removed. It starts off feeling like you have acid reflux. Then it works its way down to your right side. Trust me, you can't sleep. It's really sore. She'll be fine.
Okay, that's good to know. So if it is my appendix, I will definitely know for sure.
Oh,
it won't be a case of, let me wake up on Sunday morning and see how I'm feeling.
No, it gets a lot worse. good evening. I must say I was quite shocked when your guest the other day said that BA music is like a B-mus with a little extra. Let me relate it to a previous example discussion in today's show. B-A-M-U-S, right, is... equal to an optometrist, which is 3 years. And then you get a BMUS for you get two different ones. BAMUS, that's the optometrist. Mm-hmm. BMUS, that's like an ophthalmologist, 4 years with your requirements being way more difficult. Actually, BMUS was the first music degree that offered specialization in music technology. P.S. I thoroughly enjoy listening to your podcasts while sitting in afternoon traffic. It makes the time go by faster. That's from M.M. I didn't know that music was so. I thought.
Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, we spoke about optometry and ophthalmology and opticians and all of that stuff yesterday, and now music's complicated too.
Sure.
Who would have guessed?
Jeez, we are.
And then someone else said, "I'm black, and regarding that monkey kid, I have a white boyfriend. He calls me monkey or crazy monkey when he's feeling kinky. It begs the question." Is my Fricky racist or am I racist for calling him Fricky? I don't think that's his real name. Love is love. Love is love and muggles are stupid.
Muggles? What?
Is that a Harry Potter thing?
Yeah, in Harry Potter, all the people who can't use magic are muggles.
Oh, okay. You see, when you don't know these things, you feel very left out. They must be explained.
Exactly.
Well, I don't want to laugh, but Fricky?
Fricky.
Yeah, man.
I don't think that's his real name.
No.
I think she's taking the piss. She's calling him Fricky because he's an Afrikaans white
man. Kinky. Like, oh, fricking.
Fricking, you're so kinky.
Hiya.
Yes, sis, did I watch a cuck program last night?
Uh-oh.
What?
Why did you do that to yourself?
No, because, you know, occasionally I'll flip through the channel. So sometimes I'll stop on, like, Africa Magic, and I'll watch some of those Nigerian things.
Oh, yes. Man, oh,
but
man.
Last night I stopped on a CakeNet channel called VIA.
Wow, yeah, VIA.
So I didn't know this existed.
Wow.
So I thought, let me see what's going on here. There's this show called, what's, means like, just got married. Pas getrouwd. On the VIA.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching and this awful couple. Just this awful, awful couple. And they let the cameras into their wedding. And
so it's like an Afrikaans Our Perfect Wedding.
Exactly.
After the wedding, though.
Well, it's before. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. They kind of do a little bit before, a little bit during, a little bit after.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's just like,
yeah.
It's like OPW.
OPW.
Yeah, but it's bad. Oh. Ugh.
Don't.
Why? What's wrong with
that guy?
Just everything that they go through. I was glued to it because I couldn't believe that if you could design your perfect day, you would choose this kind of day that this chick chose. Just a horrible table decorations, horrible venue, horrible dress. The ugliest people you've ever seen in your life at this wedding. Sweet Jesus.
Yes, but, you know, people put these kinds of things together within their means, Gareth.
It wasn't
and
a money.
And their taste.
Mums, it wasn't a money thing. It was a taste thing, trust me.
Oh, she thought she was styling. You couldn't tell her anything, though.
Well, I felt like it was revolting. It made me very, it put me off humans very much.
But
yeah, but
the entire human race.
Yeah, I was quickly. Like, this okay. is just awful. And I always think about it this way. If aliens had to land on the planet and they had to see that wedding as an example of human cultural norms, they would get right in their ship and go away again. They'd be like, there's nothing to see here. These people are very simple. They're backward. Their supposedly most important ceremonial occasions during their lifetimes are filled with this, like, the trinkety, boring, ugly, plain, and uninteresting crap. And then they fulfill these rituals, and I just don't think there's anything to see here. Fellow aliens, let's just go. We'll probe that cow, and then let's get out of here.
Oh, no, not the cow.
I always probe the cow.
What did the cow ever do to anyone?
You know how it goes.
It is interesting, though, how shows of this nature are such a big hit with audiences.
People love them, huh?
Oh, people get to see bits of themselves in them.
Yeah.
It hits close to home. Every now and again, you get to make fun of the couple.
Well, I can't help thinking that there are two kinds of people who watch these shows. They're the people who watch the show because they're kind of interested in weddings and they want to get ideas and, you know, maybe they like certain things, they don't like certain things. And then there are a whole bunch of people who just want to watch this to feel superior.
Mm.
Yeah, like, oh, at least I got better taste.
I don't know whether I was fascinated because I watched 3/4 of it and then eventually I just couldn't handle it anymore and decided it was time to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
It was just bad. It was bad, bad, bad. It's like, have you ever seen that show, Boer Soeke Vrou?
Wow.
Yes.
That's on CakeNet. Yeah.
That's still with Minky, ne?
Minky van der Westhuizen.
Yeah, but it's like OPW. I've watched OPW a lot, and it's the same thing. You know, you kind of watch these people because you sometimes just want to, you want to see how people live.
Yes.
What their biggest day of their life, because for a lot of people, that is their biggest day of their life, is their wedding. How they want to be seen by the world. Because it's not like their day-to-day. You don't just get in your car, go to work. Your wedding day is a special day. You set time aside. You set money aside. You invite the people you really care about. So in that little window into their world, you get to see for one show how people would like the world to see them.
Also, a lot of viewers watching these shows, you know, they have an air of superiority about themselves where they go, well, I would never invite cameras into my wedding. What kind of people do this?
Yeah.
Let me watch.
Yeah, let me watch.
Let me watch what kind of people have cameras.
By watching, you're as bad as the people
yes.
who want the camera. At least the people who got the cameras in there are getting some, you know, cachet out of it. They maybe they're being paid. Maybe they're getting some free stuff. You don't know.
bus.
What did you do? No one cared about your wedding. No one wanted to send a camera to yours. No one came knocking on your door. Hey, can we bring a camera to your wedding? No.
Hey, just, there's an audience for it,
listen,
evidently.
There's a huge audience for it. But it's amazing to me that there are all these shows.
Mm.
And you can put together TV shows these days with your cell phone. You know, I mean, the production value is not high. It's not like they're using a crew of four people and running around, and lighting, and, you know, studio audience, any of that stuff. It's really...
Nope. You just need a crazy aunt at the wedding who'll cry or make the moment about her.
Right.
Someone to fall embarrassingly as well as they walk down the aisle.
And that stuff happens at weddings automatically. You don't have to script it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People always... There's always someone who gets drunk. There's always someone who falls or dances badly or dresses badly or eats all the food or something. It's great.
Mm.
It is fun.
So talking about Afrikaans people, I'm really not painting you all in a bad light this morning, but after yesterday's conversation about Mr. Fasachi...
Yes.
I got sent a link. This link is from 2014.
Yes.
But I was wondering, like, I wonder actually where Mr. Fasachi is. And lo and behold, he's actually arrested.
What?
He and his son were arrested. What they for? Got a 5-year prison sentence.
What?
For illegal possession of firearms and ammunition.
Yes.
Oh.
And yes, he did used to work for the RVB, Andre Fasachi.
Mm. Wow, so that's interesting. There's an update.
Yeah, five-year sentence of illegal possession of firearms, 2 years for unlawful possession of ammunition, and 1 year for possession of parts of a firearm. And by the way, his son, who he was arrested with, is only 18 years old at the time of the arrest.
You see, now, I feel bad for that son because you're so indoctrinated.
Yeah.
And you don't know any better, and your father's kind of... making you do stuff, making you gather up arms and ammunition. You don't know. You've never been allowed to think for yourself outside of the kind of strictures your parents put. That's why I always think if I do have kids, I'm not going to impose any of my ideas on them as far as I possibly can. And as a parent, this must be so hard. So if you are a parent, tell me how you manage it. Because if you impose your political, religious, cultural views on the kid,
mm-hmm.
which I suppose by observation they're going to pick up even if you're not imposing them. But what I'm talking about is you don't give them an out. You don't allow them to explore the rest of the world. Like, let's say, for example, they do want to be a Rastafarian or they want to, you know, try out Islam, or they want to try out Judaism or Christianity or one of those things. They're interested in the world. So you mm-hmm. give them books that they can read and kind of open up their mind to all of this stuff. I don't know how it works. Because there is so much information on the internet now, it's hard to keep kids within the cultural bubble that you'd like if you're a parent. And maybe you want that kind of parent. I'm not going to make assumptions. But when I grew up, then I remember my parents saying, you don't have to go to church. You don't have to read the Bible. You don't have to do any of this stuff. But just, you know, here's what we do if you like it. And I didn't like it. And I would read voraciously about all the religions. I was interested in Christianity because this is such an important part of my friends' lives, and you know, it this thing that they would do every Sunday, and you'd go to churches for weddings and funerals and stuff. And I remember that as a kid, but it wasn't like I had to believe in this stuff. And politically, my parents never said to me, "You have to support the party we support, or you have to think the way that we think about politics in South Africa." And I'd pick up on these things as a kid, I'd listen carefully, and some of the stuff would resonate with me and some of it wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I would read a lot. So I was very interested in, I don't know, I was what, like 10, 11, and how old was I in 1994? No, I must have been older than that. But I remember watching Mandela come out of prison, and I remember it made me think. It made me feel something. And I couldn't figure out what that was. But I wonder about people like Mr. Fasachi's kid. Because he's been told from whatever age that, you know, black people are this and white people are that. And you must have guns because they're coming to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy
These were homemade firearms
and now,
as well.
And like he had to sit in prison for 5 years because of what his dad taught him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a thing to do. And how do you make a homemade firearm?
That's a
talent.
That's the scary thing.
I got to figure that one out.
I'm sure you could also just do a quick search on YouTube, and they'll happy to share the information there. Sure. But you know, as adults, we often make fun of the ways that we grew up when we were younger, and about how our parents would just tell us what to do, and then you would do it. There was no negotiation, nothing. Right. Like, a lot of that is a cultural thing.
Sure.
But then I look at myself and as an adult now, and there's so many things that I no longer believe in because of, you know, being forced to do certain things as a child.
Give me an example.
Well, my brother and I, we are not church people. My mother is.
Yeah.
And my dad to a degree. But my brother and I are like, well, we don't really subscribe to the whole faith thing. We're cool. And, you know, as children, you were forced to go to church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. Forced.
Well, see, I didn't have a choice because his dad was a priest.
Yeah.
Well, as well, my parents, though, always, what I appreciate the most is they always had a conversation with us about things.
Right.
It wasn't a do this or don't do that, but it was a, this is the way we see it, this is why we think it's right, and this is why we think it's wrong. Mm. And you are still in our house, so still do respect the way we believe.
Did they say to you stuff like, one day when you have your own house, you can do what you like?
Well, on, for example, the church thing, they let us go from a very young age. So I didn't go to church, and I only went when I really felt like it.
Well, you told us for the wine.
Yeah. That was good. And when I was feeling kind of slightly peckish, I'd go for the communion bread as well. But on the note of like drinking, even still to this day, my parents know we drink,
yeah,
but we don't just waltz into their house
and start getting drunk.
Yeah, that's a no-no. But
no, sure.
That's a respect thing,
right?
Yeah, if they come over to my place and they find a bottle of wine, there's nothing that they can do about it now. So,
right.
I mean, the point being that with some children, they do become indoctrinated, and then they do become replicas of their parents. But then you also have the extreme opposite end where, because as a parent, you were bombarding your child with all of your values and your beliefs, mm-hmm, they turn out to then be the extreme opposite as adults.
Yeah, I suppose that's also what happens when you do try to like brainwash your children and they rebel.
Yeah.
Either because they're really smart or because they're just rebellious, and both are not necessarily bad things.
Mm.
Look, you know, this is the hard thing about being a parent, and it's part of the reason I'm not. Because you don't know what to do. It's always going to be an imperfect thing, right?
Always.
If I think back, I marvel at how my parents managed to raise me and my brother and sister. I mean, we were all so different. It got us all thinking so differently about things. And they kind of made us do a lot of the thinking ourselves, which I'm grateful as all hell about, because that is such a difficult thing to do. You know, as a parent, you want to protect your child. You want to give them the answers. You want to help them figure it out. But the more you interfere, the less they're actually going to use their own brain and engage their own ideas and make mistakes. Parents don't want their kids to make mistakes because, you know, that's could hurt them.
Mm.
Meanwhile, that's the best way to learn. I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard. But the reason I bring this up is because of what Sia said about Fasahi and his kid, but also because I was asked this question over the holidays by someone. Someone said to me, you know, what did you think as a kid of like apartheid and Mandela and these things? And I had to think really hard about it because I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember what you thought, what your philosophies were as a kid.
Also, as a child, you don't necessarily have a lot of confidence in your thoughts and your beliefs, and you really just take your cues from the adults around you.
Correct.
Mostly.
Correct.
So you probably would have thought alongside the beliefs of the adults who were around you at the time.
That's exactly right. But I do remember I watched the whole thing in 1990, not 94. That's why I'm confused.
Oh, 94, the election, 1990, when Mandela was released.
Right. And I do remember watching the whole thing, and I was not, like a lot of white people at that time, as far as I can recall and what I read, were very nervous because Nelson Mandela was this, you know, this frightening kind of, he was this leader of what was ultimately going to be the end of white rule, you know, so they were nervous and apprehensive about him. But I didn't feel that way watching him. I thought there's this very powerful man who's like he's clearly got enormous support. There's massive charisma, as I discovered later. And we were also curious about what he looked like, because no one had seen him.
Oh, wow.
Remember, they hadn't put out a single picture. So here he was. We knew what Winnie looked like because she'd been in the news a lot. But we didn't know what Nelson Mandela looked like. So watching him walk out of that Drakenstein prison, you're like, wow, he's an old man. I mean, he'd been in for 27 years, you know, and the only pictures that we had in the history books were pictures of him at the trial or, you know, when he was in Umkhonto weSizwe or, you know, so he was a much younger man. And then this man walked out with a suit on, his fist raised in the air, but he was calm. He was so calm. And I remember everybody around him was crazy, but he was calm. It's like, wow, this is a guy to watch. There's something going on here.
I marvel at how moments like that shape you at a young age. Mm. Because from my family, what I've learned from the early 90s, when there was that EFF, when there was that ANC and IFP fighting.
That in KZN, there was, uh-huh. was terrible violence.
And by then, my parents had three kids, my three elder sisters, and my father had a church. And when there was that fighting going on, people would seek refuge in the church.
Yeah.
So they'd be shooting each other in the streets, and then someone would be shot, and then their whole crew,
they'd bring them into the church,
would drag like this bloodied body. And I marvel and I wonder, like, what were my sisters thinking at this age? They were like 5 years old, looking out the window, hearing gunshots and seeing, like,
you ever ask them?
They always just look back at it like, whoa, what a time. I'm like, y'all, I think you need therapy. I think you all need to sit down. My dad was outside praying for people. I'm like, listen, I'm all about Jesus, but Jesus and the bullets outside. I'm going to pray for you from the window. I'll open the window and pray.
Isn't it weird that this is like living history? Because you read about it now.
And how we've moved on like this.
Well, I don't know if we have. I think there's a lot of...
Debatable, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that still needs to be dealt with. But I do think it's, you know, when you're living in history, you never get to appreciate it.
Yeah. Mm.
And then afterwards...
Because it just was what it was.
Well, that's it. I mean, I probably would have paid more attention if I'd known what tumultuous times I was living through when I was a kid. I was interested, for sure. More interested than most. But I wish I'd paid even more attention. Because then if someone asked me today, I could have given them a decent answer. Maybe that's true for everybody. You know, you ask your parents, you know, do you know what you were doing when they landed that craft on the moon? And some people will say yes, and some people will say no. We didn't really have TV in South Africa then, because they kept TV out.
What year was that? Around about when?
69.
Oh, shucks, that's serious.
So they had to listen on the radio and imagine this thing landing on the moon. And then if you wander even further back, and this is where oral tradition is such an important part of all human society, you ask people about, you know, major wars or about skirmishes and battles and, you know, mothers trying to protect their children while fire was raining down and all kinds of shit, and you think, wow, we really, humans have made it.
We have lived.
We have made it through some really difficult times.
We're quite resilient.
We're damn resilient. We're like those plants, those weeds that grow up where, you know, people have put salt on the earth.
Just power through.
Like, we should not have got through all the shit that we, a lot of it we caused ourselves, but you think of natural disasters and droughts and famines and shit like that. People should have gone extinct a long time ago. Mm.
Thrown in the towel.
Yeah. And you think of how feeble and weak we are for the first, I don't know, 6 years of our lives. You can't fend for yourself. You need to be looked after for those first couple of years of your life. Whereas your giraffe falls out of its mother from a height, by the way. Yeah. From a height. Falls down. If that thing doesn't get up and start walking very shortly, some other animal's going to come and eat it. It's got minutes. And then it's done.
Minutes to figure out this whole earth thing.
Yeah. Look at a human baby, useless for the longest time.
Yeah.
Can't do anything.
Nope. Just farts and poops and
screams.
Gets fed.
Yeah. It's just amazing. Anyway, we've gone all over the place. This wasn't meant to be such a...
How fascinating. Yeah.
All right. there's lots to get into. Let's start with the five things you need to know today. And we'll start with a story or two from Mubs. I've got one or two as well. Let's see what we can help you with.
Well, I know that a lot of us are still feeling the hurt from the December overspending. So in a bit of good news, South African motorists can expect some relief at the pumps because the price of fuel is going to go down at the end of January. Oh, the Automobile Association says the price of petrol is set to decrease by at least 41 cents per litre. Diesel is going to go down by 23 cents. The AA says the country will need to stay attractive to investors if fuel prices are to remain stable this year. But yes, that's our first petrol price decrease coming your way at the end of January.
Well, has that got to do with the rand going down because of Cyril coming in? Because that's what's happened. Like, if you trace that back, oil price, we buy in rands. So if we're doing better against the dollar, sorry, we buy in dollars. So if we're doing better against the dollar with our rands, then we can buy more oil at a cheaper price. Means we can bring down the oil price for everybody. And that's as a result of what happened in December at the ANC conference, because that's when the rand started going down, or rather the price of the rand started going down against the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, thanks, Cyril. Not a lot we can thank him for, but there's one.
Okay, you can start ticking off your list of thank yous then.
Right. There's a guy called Amesh Ramnarain. He was the motorist who was charged with crashing into and killing two cyclists on the M4 out of Durban 2 years ago. He says he was not drunk on the morning of the accident. The reason this is news now is because the Durban Regional Court yesterday heard his version that he had only consumed four cider drinks during that evening. At one stage, other patrons at the bar had spilt drinks on him. That's what he said.
Okay.
He denied any negligence, claiming he was driving home at 5 in the morning when he heard a loud bang and his windscreen shattered. You know, if I were the judge listening to this, so the reason he said he had these drinks spilt on him is because he had alcohol all over his shirt and smelt of alcohol.
Mm.
He says only four cider drinks, but he was on his way home at 5 in the morning.
Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
What do you think this makes any sense?
What does the law say in terms of being drunk? When are you drunk? Are you drunk if you are over the legal limit?
Yeah.
Is that what the law says?
Which is like half a glass of wine.
Oh, well, then we're all drunk. We've all been drunk.
But don't give me that, like, 5 in the morning, only four ciders thing. You don't have... If you drink four ciders, you're going to be finished and ready to go home by 12. 1, maybe. 5 in the morning? You keep going until 5 in the morning? You've been drinking some heavy shots. It's just a thought.
Yeah.
Anyway...
An aide to the former Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe has revealed how generals had warned him, apparently, to step aside as protests against him grew or face being lynched like Libya's Muammar Gaddafi. Wow. We all saw the massive street protests against the 93-year-old that erupted after the military briefly took power in November, following the veteran leader's sacking of the then Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who of course is now in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And Mugabe subsequently resigned after apparently striking a deal with the army and supporters of Mnangagwa.
Yeah, his name is a bit of
It gets the mouth working. Who then succeeded Mugabe, but yeah, news now emerging that apparently Robert had been threatened, if you will, of being lynched if he didn't step down. Do you remember some of those visuals from Muammar Gaddafi?
And Saddam. Do you remember when they dug Saddam out of that hole?
Bodies being dragged down the streets.
Yeah, with Muammar Gaddafi, they found him in that stormwater drain.
Jeez.
Well, they pushed him into it, and then they were pulling him out, kicking him, hitting him, stripping him naked. Do you remember? I mean, it was a horrible way for anyone to die.
Yeah.
I don't hold a candle for Muammar Gaddafi, but that was nasty. You can still see it on YouTube. I think it's still up there. And then this is a story I saw in the news yesterday. I couldn't believe it. I had to rub my eyes and look at the screen again. A preservation order is expected to be served on Trillion and McKinsey on Tuesday for assets worth around $1.6 billion, the NPA confirmed. Both companies are linked to the Gupta family. Luvuyo Mfaku from NPA said that the order relates to consultancy work done by the companies for Eskom and Transnet. So they have 90 days to indicate whether they are defending the matter. If they do, the onus is on them. to satisfy the court that they acquired the assets through lawful means. So, the NPA seemed to be going for the Guptas.
Yeah.
This must be, I mean, the president's next, right? Because once this turns, then everybody's going to turn. It's such a fine balance. 6 months ago, we sat here with Justice Malala and we were saying, the president's not going anywhere. He's got all the power in his hands. He's got everything under control. There's no way they're going to move him. Now, the balance is just slightly tipped the other way and they're coming for him. You can tell. First thing, aim at the Guptas. Take them out, then take him down.
Yeah.
Sean the sheep.
Sean the sheep?
What's he doing?
Well, he is probably sitting nervously, Gareth, because with the newly elected ANC president Cyril Ramaphosa adamant to root out this corruption, it has been reported that Ramaphosa intends to remove Sean Abrahams. Hmm. And I wonder if this story is linked to any of these recent reports about how Cyril Ramaphosa is receiving legal opinion advising that he could do so immediately if he wants to have Sean the sheep removed.
Do it.
The Sunday Times, back on Sunday, already reported that Ramaphosa was also made aware of dozens of high-profile state capture cases which are ready for prosecution. All that's needed, really, is for him to give the word go. He has the power to do so. So maybe Sean Abrahams is sitting just a little bit more nervous than usual these days.
Good. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. All right, I think that's five things you need to know this morning. There's going to be a whole lot more at 7 o'clock, and we've got Run popping by with some cryptocurrency later on, so I'm not even going to give you the Bitcoin and Ethereum update now. We can chat about that later on. Actually, I woke up this morning and saw that there were some of these cryptos that are down 10% in one day.
Ooh. What is happening?
Exactly. So it's a perfect day for Run to pop by and tell us what he thinks, especially for all those people hopping on board with the cryptocurrency stuff that's going on. All right, we've got a movie called The Shape of Water, which we're putting on tomorrow night? No, Thursday night.
Thursday
night, but you need to get your tickets ASAP, all right? The Shape of Water is what it's called. It received 12 nominations at the BAFTAs, which are happening soon. Among others, it was nominated for Best Film, Cinematography, Costume Design, and Visual Effects. The director, Guillermo del Toro, was nominated for both Directing and Original Screenplay Awards. Doesn't this get you even more excited for our exclusive screening of The Shape of Water on Thursday night? Well, if you missed out on getting your hands on tickets, catch the movie as it is released nationally from Friday, the 19th of December, because I think we're all out, right? Sold out on our side.
Mm-hmm.
So don't bother emailing us, and don't pitch up on Thursday, because we're not going to let you in if you don't have tickets. Go to cliffcentral.com for more info. You can find out all about the movie and go and see it from Friday. All right, I got a clip of Donald Trump talking about who he would like as a running mate long ago in 1999. You're not going to believe this. Have you seen this, Mabali?
Mm-mm.
Okay, let me play this for you. It's going to blow your mind. This is in 1999. Here's Donald Trump, right?
Let's get into some things. The Reform Party by...
And by the way, this is Larry King interviewing him. You could tell immediately, right?
Let's get into some things. The Reform Party, by its name, means reform. You will be leaving, if you run this, you believe in what? The Republican Party?
I'm a registered Republican. I'm a pretty conservative guy. I'm somewhat liberal on social issues, especially health care, etc. But I'd be leaving another party, and I've been close to that party.
Why would you leave the Republican Party?
I think that nobody's really hitting it right. The Democrats are too far left. I mean, Bill Bradley, this is seriously left. He's trying to come a little more center, but he's seriously left. The Republicans are too far right. And I don't think anybody's hitting the chord. Not the chord that I want to hear, and not the chord that other people want to hear. And I've seen it. Plus, I think there's a great lack of spirit in this country. What's happened over the last 4 years is disgusting, and I just think there's a tremendous lack of spirit, and I think the spirit has to be brought back.
You have a vice presidential candidate in mind?
Well, I really haven't gotten quite there yet. I love Oprah. Oprah would always be my first choice.
How's that?
No!
Yes! Donald Trump in 1999 saying, who would his perfect running mate be? Oprah Winfrey.
The
Antichrist?
Yes.
Wow.
So that's who he wanted. There it is in his own words.
There's a tremendous lack of spirit, and I think the spirit has to be brought back.
You have a vice presidential candidate in mind?
Well, I really haven't gotten quite there yet. I love Oprah. Oprah would always be my first choice.
Oprah,
your competitor, right?
Oprah's a competitor.
You know what?
I'll
tell you, she's really a great woman, though. She is a terrific woman. She's somebody that's very special. I have not even thought about it. I guess we'll see. We'll see. Maybe that's part of the whole process.
Would she be someone, I mean, kidding aside, that you might think about?
If she'd do it, she'd be fantastic. I mean, she's popular. She's brilliant. She's a wonderful woman. I mean, if she'd ever do it, I don't know that she'd ever do it. She's got,
You'd ask her.
She'd be sort of like me. I mean, I have a lot of things going. She's got a lot of things going.
What a ticket that would be.
That would be a pretty good ticket, but she's a very exceptional woman.
Yeah. So there we go.
Oh,
he didn't really want Mike Pence after all, did he? Deep down inside, he wanted Oprah.
Well, how times have changed.
Isn't it great to have the internet? You can look this stuff up and you can see whether people are really, you know, whether they meant what they said. And also, obviously, you know, he could have changed his mind in between. But
absolutely.
At that stage when he was thinking, if I ever did go into politics.
Right now, I couldn't imagine Trump criticizing the Republicans. But, you know, back then he said they're not quite doing
it
for me.
The whole way through the campaign, all he was doing was criticizing the Republicans.
Really?
Yes. Do you remember what he said about all the other Republican candidates? Do you remember?
No, but I mean, he had to. I mean, that he was competing against
them. He was saying, this party's screwed. You guys have messed it up. I'm the only one who can fix it.
Of course.
Typical Trump style. But yeah, there's an interesting clip from 1999. Oprah Winfrey would have made his perfect VP choice for vice president.
That is funny.
Then you get to Said by Sia. Let's check in on Sia. You want your theme music that we've chosen for today?
I don't know why it took us so long to think about this particularly. Come on.
Okay.
Because I'm happy.
This is cool.
All right, let's go. What do you got for us?
This could work. So this morning, I wanted to talk about faking it till you make it. Isn't the fact that just one of the biggest obstacles for us to feel happy is the fact that we just don't feel happy, right? It's just obvious. It either happens or just doesn't. It's sort of like, I don't know, the weather. Sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold, and sometimes we just are not happy. That's what we tend to think anyway. So there are, though, some ways to get a little happiness boost if we just happen to fake it till we make it.
Right.
So there is some scientific reasoning to this. So I have 3 points this morning. If you aren't exactly feeling happy, you can fake it, and that is how you'll generally end up that way. So number one,
pretend you're happy?
Absolutely.
You have to act. You have to pull out a Hollywood acting award.
Well, listen to this. Number one, faking a smile. So sure, when you first fake a smile, it just feels weird. But science actually proves that just by simply forming a smile, genuine or not, actually boosts your feelings of well-being over time. It's not just that happiness makes you smile. It's also that smiling can make you happier. Hmm. People who've gotten Botox injections, this is actually interesting, are scientifically proven to be happier overall. Maybe in part because they can't frown, but also because that emotions create facial expressions. But it also works the other way around too. Once you realize that turning that frown upside down isn't just a platitude, it might inspire you to give it a try. So look, Botox people are actually happier. Second way to fake it till you make it is if you straighten up. Research has shown that your posture affects your emotion. So if you simply sit up or stand up straighter, with an elongated spine, more open chest position, and a raised gaze, has mood brightening results. Folks, we can fake it till we make it here. And then lastly, if we just breathe. A 2010 study showed emotional states can be created by breathing patterns. And the great news is that it's not complicated. It doesn't require incense or gong or candles. So look at that. If we just focus on our breathing, if we actually straighten up, and if we put that fake smile on our face, it somehow affects our mood, and that is how you can fake it till you make
it. What are you thinking of my buddy's posture this morning? You think we're happy?
Well, I think we always need a posture boost, though. We're always slightly crouched over.
Yeah, I'm slouched over right now.
Yeah, it's bad.
We've got to fix that, right?
Sum up your inner Miss America contestant. Fake smile, breathe properly, and have great posture, and you shall be happier.
Yeah, only you, Sia. Only you.
Bring your Miss America posture. I love
it. Yes.
All right.
I love my new theme music, by the way.
I do too.
It's going to stick.
All right, we'll keep it.
Yeah.
For at least now.
After 40,000 years.
Yeah, trying to find theme music. Yes. And finding the most ridiculous music on the planet that didn't work. All right. I did see a story that kind of worried me a little bit. Someone sent me a picture. Well, it was a screenshot of this article about the mom of the boy in the H&M ad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She said she's been called a monkey now as well after she upset people by saying that they should get over it, that whole H&M ad.
Mm-hmm.
She said, my kid's happy, I'm happy. We don't think we're monkeys. If you have insecurities, that's your business. But you should get over it. And now everybody's saying to her, oh, you don't. You have no self. You have no agency. How can you decide how you feel? We'll tell you how to feel.
Which...
I don't understand.
Doesn't make sense, yeah.
Yeah, if this woman doesn't feel offended by this, who are you to tell her that she must be offended by it? Like, who are these people who want everyone to feel like they feel? How do you wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to impose my thoughts and feelings on everyone else today? And if they don't go with it, I'm going to call them a monkey. Which is precisely what they're upset about in the first place. Now they're calling her a monkey?
Mm.
It just seems to me like that's where the problem is. The problem is deep down inside, you want to call someone else a monkey. If you're calling the mother of the kid who says, he's not upset, I'm not upset, leave it alone, get over it. Then what do? You turn on her and call her a monkey? Like, that's just such a mean-spirited place to come from.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. It really bothers me.
If I was advising her in terms of... dealing with,
just say shut up.
No, right. Really, in terms of like PR and dealing with a situation with such a heightened emotions from everyone, I would have not used the words get over it. You can say that in a different way. And I think like get over it sounds too sassy, like whatever, get over it. You know, you could just said, I'm not offended by it. I think it's cool. My kid has done tons of modeling jobs and there's no problem with this in my eyes. And that's it. I don't even think she needs to apologize.
I would have told her not to get involved at all. Let the noise happen around you and just keep it moving.
Yeah, just ignore it because you can't win with these people.
You can't win with either side.
The Twitter mob, you're not going to win.
Yeah, get over it just sounds too like, in your face, I got my money, I'm leaving here.
Well, remember the other day I said to you that I took Carl and all the other dogs to the vet for their inoculations?
Yes, with your sister,
yeah,
right?
In the back of her car. I mean, there's still like dog hair all over the back of her car.
I still wish I could have seen a picture of that.
I have a picture somewhere. Maybe I'll post it.
Just all of you
took
together.
All these dogs to the vet, and they had to get their rabies shot, which you have to get once a year, and they had to get dewormed.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not always a bag of sweets to have animals. You got to look after them. And they have to go every year for these inoculations. Cost R1,700 for the four dogs. Oh, yeah. So if you don't have R1,700 lying around, that could really hold you back. That could cause some trouble for your January.
Well, then imagine if you found something on one of the dogs as well.
Well, yeah, that's also the problem. But, and I'll tell you something about that tomorrow. But if you haven't heard of it already, we're going to be starting something fun with One Plan Pet Insurance soon. A lot of people have pets. A lot of people who listen to us have pets. And you can claim for a vet visit before you even see the vet with One Plan Pet Insurance. You can insure the health of your pets from as little as R125 a month. Just SMS PET, P-E-T, to 31644. Right now. Do it now, and One Plan will call you back. That's PET, P-E-T. Just SMS it to 31644. Got it? Let me give it to you again. If you are interested and you want to get your pets insured from as little as R125 a month, and they will take you and give you the money before you even see the vet, they'll give you that claim. 31644 is the SMS number. SMS the word PET to them. 31644. Do it today and you will say thank you when you end up with a big bill and your pets are not insured. I've got to get Carl onto this. That's what I'm going to do. That's the plan. All right. One plan.
That is the one plan.
My one plan.
See what you did there.
Okay, when we come back, we'll have a little bit of news and get into some of the stories around the Guptas and lots of other things that are going on in South Africa and in the world today. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.